So this is a very different hesped, and let me explain. Today in Eretz Yisrael, I'm on the way back from a very, very long trip. It was a three-hour hesped. It took us an hour and a half to get there. It's going to take us 3 hours back in the pouring, pouring rain. So my feet are waterlogged, very cold. It's the eighth day of Hanukkah, but we all went to the Levaya of Rav Chaim Drukman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Now, I didn't know him that well. Didn't know him at all, in fact. I may have shaken his hand once, but that's the extent of our relationship, and even that I'm not sure. And why would I be delivering a hesped for someone who I never met, had no contact with, and never read his svarim or his ideas? Very often you didn't meet someone where they're living, but you meet them through their ideas, through their works that you read. I never read his ideas, so why would I be giving this hesped? Because I think a lot of people who listen to some of my Torah or my ideas, in Chutz Laretz in particular, have no clue who he was, no clue what world he represented, and quite frankly, if you get on the news tonight, Israeli news, you'll see, I don't know what the numbers were, but it's hard to know whenever you're part of a crowd, but our estimate, probably 50, 60,000 people, so that's a pretty big Levaya, probably more, but based on this traffic, and how long it's going to take me to get home, it feels like it's about a million people, but that's neither here nor there. I'm stuck on a bus. So I feel even just sharing my view on who he was and collecting some of the ideas that were expressed at the Levaya and the various Hespedim, and in fact, in a helpful and authentic way, contrasting him with some of the people who we typically view as Gedolim, and he wasn't that gadol in the typical sense, may be helpful for people to wrap their heads around who he was and why he was different. So that's the purpose of my giving a hesped, but 1,000 disclaimers. This is not a hesped from someone that knew him, but it is a hesped from someone that lived in his world. That's why I went to the hesped today, and it's a very different world than a lot of people listening may be part of, the Yeshiva Shevel, the modern Orthodox world. It's clearly a very different world. It's called Dati Lumi, and it's centered upon very different values. Obviously, there are many, many overlaps between all the worlds, but this is a very different type of person. What makes him different? So, typically, I want to choose my words as carefully as I can on a frozen bus ride home, but typically, when we think about Gedolim, so the classic Gadol is a person who's a master of Torah, someone who's been through Shas multiple times, written Svarim, teaches thousands of people the mysteries, the inner logic of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will as expressed through Torah Shebaal Peh. Someone like, let's say, Rabbi Soloveitchik, if you're listening and you're identified with that group, or some of the other Gedolim in our world or in our past heritage, my own Rabbi Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who opened up the world of Torah Shebaal Peh to me and for me. And Rav Drukman wasn't that. He learned in the Yeshiva Merkos HaRav, but again, I never heard a shir of his, I never attended a shir of his, but I would imagine that many of his Talmidim would agree that wasn't what made him exceptional, attending his shir on Gemara. Well, oftentimes it's someone who's a great posek. If the person isn't, let's say that, and as I've said many times in these conversations, it's very hard to be both a great posek and a great lamdan because the mental processes are completely antithetical. One tries to funnel down to the majority opinions or the dominant opinions of posek and get rid of all the minority opinions as being non-halachic or the one we were not going to accept. And a lamdan tries to propagate as many opinions as he can to try to track down as many elements of Hashem's ratzon. Okay, so great posekim, people, let's say one of the biggest lamdanim, a lot of people read of Moshe Feinstein's Dibros Moshe. I have the Dibros Moshe at home. In the Yeshiva Shevelt, in the Olam HaTorah, we don't run to read every Dibros Moshe. You read it here or there if you pick it up on a shelf. It's not what Moshe was known for. He was known for being one of the leading poskim of his generation. You can make the same claim about many others. Rav Avadya Yosef, right? Again, it's just such a torrent of information, it's hard to see where there is or isn't lumdus, but again, you don't get the feeling that he's growing branches to the tree. You get the feeling that he's pruning branches from the tree to get down to the bark. This is maybe a very apt metaphor. Are you a branch grower or a branch pruner? A posek is a branch pruner getting down to the trunk, and a lamdan is a branch grower. Now, very often we say, again, I don't like that word gadol because it's so slippery, but very often we'll talk about someone who is a major, major thinker. They're not a lamdan in the classic sense. They're certainly not a posek in the classic sense, but they open up new horizons of ideas at important times in history. One could say that about Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, let's say. Joy issued Pesachim, but I haven't ever heard his Pesach quoted as a major, major novel idea contributing to the world of Pesach. He learned from Rav Natali Etlinger, the Binyan Zion, Nerech Lener. But again, we don't go through a sugya and all of a sudden uncover some great new ideas and new discovery in the sugya of Talmudic logic from Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. But for his time in Germany, he was a maverick thinker, and he introduced a range of ideas, system of ideas, that people led their lives by, that created new communal and even European ways of serving a Kaddish Baruch Hu, modernized Yiddishkeit in a very important juncture in history. You think about Rabbi Sachs, and Rabbi Sachs being the face of modern Jewish thought as, I don't know if I've ever heard people say this, but as the Jewish world and the Christian world reach a rapprochement, all of a sudden some of the ideas about Christianity and about Gentiles and about other religions felt outdated in a world of civility, in a world of monotheism, in a world of acceptance of Jews, and yet a world of anti-Semitism, which he labored and battled so fiercely, and that I think is part of his genius. I don't think you would apply any of these definitions of Gedolim to Rabbi Druckmann. Again, I haven't read his Svarim, haven't listened to his Shiurim, but that itself is saying something, because his Shiurim and his Shiurim and Gemara, his Psakim, they're not quoted with great authority and with great novelty. So why were there tens of thousands of people at the Levaya? So I think it's a chance for us to appreciate some of the traits that were spoken about and that registered with me when people mentioned it at the funeral. It's not as if they were completely foreign to me. By the way, I'm speaking very lowly because I'm on a bus, so I'm trying to be sensitive to the driver who's sitting right in front of me and to the mashgiach who's sitting right next to me. But I certainly want to get this out as quickly as I can so people can listen. So he doesn't fit those classic molds, and yet he changed so much of Torah in Eretz Yisrael in ways that don't flow through the normal circuitry of Gedolim, of learning and Psak. So who was he? And how is this reflective of a whole form of Avodas Hashem in the Dati Lumi world that even amongst the people doesn't always come out in how much Gemara they learn? And that's what I think is a big takeaway for people to understand. Not that people in Dati Lumi don't learn Gemara, or not everyone, so even the people who view themselves as the medium of his, but I would say it is this, what's the word I'm looking for? I actually stopped the recording just to think for a minute. Normally I just say what's on my mind, but I want to get this right, and some of the ideas were expressed at the Levaya. What I would say is as follows. There are two new outlets to the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our world. The typical outlet for someone that loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu was to try to study as much of his will as you could, to study as much Torah. And all of a sudden now we're in the land of Israel, and there are two new outlets of love. And I say outlets, not two new loves, because it should come, as it did for Rabbi Akiva, out of this overarching love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so in addition to loving his will and loving his Torah, you want to love every single Jew, because every single Jew is Baruch Atam Hashem Elokeichem. Now, that's one statement in the 18th century when Hasidus sounds that statement, because you're talking about isolated Jews who are off the derech, as we would say, out of the shtetl. How do you express love for them? It's a whole different story when millions of Jews leave. And I was thinking a lot about the Lubavitcher Rebbe today and parallels between the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Chaim Druckmann. But when you get to the land of Israel, and there's this organ that people can belong to and do belong to, even without common religious practice, that love is tested, but also has a heft and a resonance to it that it doesn't have when it's just one Jew leaving the shtetl for the Hasidim, or even millions of Soviet Russian Jews or American Jews that Lubavitcher Rebbe was so dedicated to, including. And here's the next part, and a lot of people don't get this. If you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so deeply, in addition to loving His Word and loving His people, you want to love His land. And that's where I think Rav Drukman was an icon. As one of the founders of Gush Emunim and one of the leading forces, and he conducted the first Seder in Chevron, the Redeemed Chevron, the Park Hotel. They put Chevron on the map, and you can wiki all these things. Just wiki Chevron, Park Hotel, Seder, Rav Drukman. And that's what a lot of people, I think, who live in Israel in their gilded, sectored areas, don't get about how important settlement is, and harsh, unequivocal, demanding every inch of land. It comes across as hawkish, and it comes across as racist for some people, and it comes across as politically impractical. But when it comes from the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's just another, it's the ebbing moments of Hanukkah, just another branch of the menorah, so it's an integrated love. And here's where I want to choose my words carefully. Ideally, yes, you can have one person who encompasses it all, but you'd have to be a very special person. And we should all try to be that person who loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu so deeply, and is a big Talmid Chacham, and loves every inch of land, and loves every single Jew. And maybe I'm describing some people that this audience is familiar with. But very often, it's one at the cost of the other, in some cases, just because of investment of resources, and his love for the Jewish people, his commitment and devotion. And he basically founded Hesder. Anyone who's listening to this year, who attended any Hesder yeshiva in Israel, and for that matter, any program in Israel, because it's a fair argument to make that without the Hesders admitting Americans in the 70s and 80s, all the American programs of the 90s and the 2s would not have emerged. And when he arrived on the scene, Bnei Akiva was a youth movement, a firm youth movement, but it didn't have a Torah content. And he filled it with Torah content. And as part of that, he was the leading force behind the first Hesder yeshiva, Yeshivas Keren Biavne. Now, you've heard me often say the yeshiva at Har Zion was the first Hesder yeshiva. Again, it depends how you count it. If you count it chronologically, and Keren Biavne was the first Hesder yeshiva. Rav Amitel, my Rebbe, and I'll put a picture of Amitel and of Drukman together, he was the first to try to envision what Hesder would look like, not just as a place for people to study Torah before they went to the army, but as an integrated part of changing society. But for the purposes of our conversation right now, chronologically, starkly, Bnei Akiva is the first Hesder yeshiva. So anyone out there who's learned, which I assume is probably close to 70-80% of the people listening, who's learned in a Hesder yeshiva in Israel, or in a girls' seminary, or women's seminary, or an American program, it's all because of Rav Drukman. And I'll talk about his devotion later. You can't do that if you're sitting in sickness all day. Believe me, I struggle with this every minute of every day. I would love to learn another piece of Gemara and another Tosfos, and if this traffic jam lasts any longer, I think I'll probably have the chance to. I've been in a bus all day. But you just can't do it all. And that is where he shined. The trends, the ability to integrate those three loves. And of course, don't think he was just a lover of Eretz Yisrael and a lover of the Jewish people. And how much Torah he was marbitz. But again, he was the marbitz star. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, and his shirim were beloved to all. But I don't know, I can't tell you that for generations people are going to quote his Chidushi Torah. Again, I don't know. So if you're listening to this and you have a different idea, and you've heard shirim, but that's not his legacy. And part of what I noticed at the Hesped, and really this is just my thoughts over the last 3-4 hours, so it's very personal. It's not, that doesn't stem from any long-term relationship. Is as part of that love, he was just so devoted and single-minded and self-annihilating. Again, some people need a quote from a gadol, about a gadol, just to validate the topic of the quote. So here's the quote. Rav Shlomo Zalman said about Rav Jerkman, so those are not necessarily two people you would associate with one another. Rav Shlomo Zalman said about Rav Jerkman that he was a cheftza of Mesiris Nefesh Dam Yisrael. So those of you who are Lamdanim, you'll appreciate that. A cheftza is someone who dispossesses or divests his own animate cognitive self to become just so given and so subservient to some larger purpose. A cheftza in Gemara language is a passive utensil rather than a gavra. The gavra is the antonym. So a gavra is a person of ideas, of principles, of ego, of needs, of interests. And he was just, he so eliminated and emptied himself of any personal interests that he became a cheftza of Mesiris Nefesh Dam Yisrael. And again, many people in Chutz La'aretz know him, sadly, it happens all the time, based on the somewhat controversial events that he was involved in to try to create a pathway for Jews to be included in the State of Israel, not just as citizens, but as halachic Jews who came from the former Soviet Union. And again, this is something that Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't have to deal with because he wasn't operating within a national setting. He was operating with just, how can I just get Jews out of Russia and make them feel Jewish? But it's not enough in Israel to feel Jewish, because if you're not a member of the Jews, you can't marry Jews, and it's a whole different sub-demographic. And it's, you know, it's anyone's guess what Lubavitcher Rebbe would have said or done in our context. And as I tweeted earlier today, that Rav Amar, Shlomo Amar, no one would accuse him of being liberal and being ahalachic. He was the former Sephardic chief rabbi. He was broken up in tears during the Hasbit because they were personal friends, even though they'd come to it later in life. And they worked very closely together in Geirus. And Rav Amar says, and I'm just going to see if I could find the quote, but basically Rav Amar said that whenever Rav Jerkman consulted with Rav Amar, and that would be the logical hierarchy, Rav Amar was the more classic Talmud Chacham / Posek. So whenever Rav Jerkman would consult with Rav Amar, so Rav Jerkman would follow Rav Amar's guidance, position, without changing a word, without changing, as Rav Amar said, kachot asaira, even a small little jot or tittle. And you can argue the geiros, and a lot of people argue the details of geiros, but it's one thing to argue it from afar, either geographically or historically. It's another thing to face the crisis we're facing. And again, I'm not conversant enough in the positions he took, and this is not supporting or opposing it, but just putting it into context. And if you just look at it in halachic vacuum, you could find the halachic irregularities or the leniencies you're not willing to accept. But if you put it into the historical context and the national context, and so much of what people who don't live in Israel don't understand about the ideas that come out of people who live in Israel, is it's just the equations here are so multivariable, and there's so many crosswinds. And again, if you're a Haredi, then your legitimate approach is to say it all begins and ends with halacha, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu b'olam ha'adal and amashal halacha bilvad, and whatever larger national issues there are, from Shemitah to Geir to Kashrus, let Hashem worry about that. And when I say let Hashem worry about that, b'schus our Talmud Torah and b'schus our Shemitah Mitzvos, Hashem will resolve these incorrigible problems for us, and that's the Shita. But if you're of a different Shita and you want to try to tackle some of these issues without violating halachic integrity, it becomes very, very complex in ways that life isn't. And some people flee from that complexity, and some people embrace that complexity because we haven't had the opportunity in so long to live with that complexity. And we hope, of course, that our world will become less complex. So that's why he feels a little different. And he was, it's going to sound very strange, and the truth is, I remember almost, not saying this in ways that were disrespectful, but thinking it in ways that I think in retrospect were disrespectful. I didn't think it in a disrespectful manner, but he was perhaps the most successful Madrich in Bnei Akiva ever. Now, his start was a Madrich in Bnei Akiva, and his start was as a Shliach, and he worked his way up through the ranks of Bnei Akiva and through the army. Obviously, we should all be as knowledgeable and as much of a tzaddik in Torah and Avas Yisrael and Shmiras HaMitzvos and Siris Nefesh Dam Yisrael as at Bnei Akiva Madrich, speaking from someone who was never a Bnei Akiva Madrich, and this is not to laud Bnei Akiva, it's a be-all and end-all. There are many great institutions. Bnei Akiva does its part, and others do this, but it's not a pro-Bnei Akiva. I'm just placing him in the pantheon of how you'd call him, and he actually said that that he was very careful not to dress as a rabbi, and he would often actually wear the Bnei Akiva shirt with the shoelaces, that for many people who have negative associations with Bnei Akiva, it's very jarring to see someone of that caliber. But what happened was he created movement and influence and change from the bottom up, as Kabbalah likes to say, Isra'usa de la Tata, not Isra'usa de la Ela. Typically the change comes, and certainly you can contrast this with the Haredi world, which is so top-down, where the Mu'atzes Gedolei Yisrael say becomes the law, and everyone has to follow and kowtow, and in a good way. It's not meant to say it in a negative fashion. It has to submit to those large ideas that are handed down from up above. And this was a completely different change. And that's why so many people don't understand him. He was a madrich. Obviously, he learned in Yeshivas Merkos Harav with many Gedolei Torah, and he was a gadol in Torah. But not in the classic way that the Chidushim would blow you off your rocker, as we would say, or ideas that you never had thought of. And what stood out for people was, number one, of course, how much he changed. It's hard to imagine. I'll say this. It's hard to imagine as someone who was a Talmud of Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein. I would say, okay, it would be fair to say that his impact on the Dati Lumi Torah world surpassed that of Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital. It's hard because Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital created banks of ideas. When you create these very, very deep ideas that people continue to quote, so the dividends constantly roll over. I don't know how often, again, maybe I'm not that much in that world, but I don't get the sense that people are quoting, oh, he said this incredible idea on Yosef and his brothers, this incredible chiddush on Tosfos. But in terms of a pace setter and creating a model and creating a level of commitment to those three values of Torah Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, I was at Rav Lichtenstein's Levaya. I don't remember there being the same amount of people. Again, I was inside and wasn't sitting outside. And I was just looking around and seeing how many people. Again, people could call it the Hardali world if you're a little more familiar with it. I dislike these labelings. I came today because I felt part of the same world. Some other short ideas. Let's see. They speak about his warmth as a person. And it's something I struggle with a lot. Many of the Gedolim, let's say, that I look up to, and many of the Gedolim that we speak about, you wouldn't say that their warmth was their calling card. Because you're a man of ideas, and your mind is riveted to this other world, not necessarily the world in front of you. And as much as you can speak about Tzelem Elokim, as the Altar of Slobodka did, as much as you can speak about Kavod HaBrios, and as much as you can speak about, and speaking about them, when I think about them, I have to be honest with this, it's coming from your mind. It's not coming from, I don't want to say it's not coming from your heart, but it's a combination of mind and heart. And this is what I mentioned before, that sometimes it's hard for one person to be everything. And just the way that people talked about the warmth of this person, it just took me by surprise. Someone that had never known this gadol, Ashley Beebe, and I don't often quote Beebe Netanyahu for many reasons, but Beebe spoke about the fact that Rav Druckman's voice was always hoarse. It was something natural, not because he was always screaming divrei Torah. He just had a hoarse voice. That was his the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created his voice, or maybe happened later in life, I don't know, but that also had an appeal and a charm and a warmth. And I was thinking about that actually because when Beebe got up to speak and he's so polished in the middle of the hesped, Mr. Polished Beebe got up and it made a negative impression on me. You know, you want to feel emotion, you want to feel passion. And then when he said Rav Druckman's voice was hoarse, I was saying maybe you should have a hoarse voice. But not necessarily relevant, but just my own thoughts during. And his handshake, people were talking about his handshake and how bracing his handshake was. And Rav Amar, the former chief rabbi, was saying something that we all know, how politicians across the spectrum felt united. And in a world of such divided politics and such sectarian politics, to have someone that even someone quoted Yossi Sarietz, the people who are older than 45 probably remember him as an arch left winger, how respectful he was of Rav Drukman, even though Rav Drukman's politics and positions were diametrically opposed. Yossi Sarietz, Rav Amar spoke about his humility and lack of self-interest, and how Rav Amar always wanted him to speak, I think, at family events. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Drukman and Rav Amar were so close that Rav Drukman was invited to the family events of Rav Amar, and you have to, I'm sure all these Hespedim were available online, but something of that nature, and Rav Drukman always deferred, and that's also something. Let me summarize it this way. Humility, warmth, sometimes it's harder for people who are great thinkers to feel them as naturally. I'm not a great thinker, not a great warm person. I try to be as best as I can. I just think there are different centers of gravity. I know myself, my center of gravity is my mind is very often elsewhere. And very often in a Tosfos, and very often in a Medrash, and very often in an article I'm writing. And of course, when a person comes my way, I try to be as kind as I can. And of course, there are moments in which I feel my heart overcoming my head. But I think that sometimes when you have someone who isn't, as for lack of a better word, as brainy, I'm not judging what his IQ was, but whose world isn't the world of ideas and Tosfos and concepts, and he lives these traits so deeply and so emphatically, it just rubs off on people. And, I'll leave this as an open question, maybe it rubs off on people in ways that ideas and Chiddushi Torah don't. As broadly, for sure, because Chiddushi Torah and ideas are much more limited in their appeal. The question is it deeper or not deeper? And that's a question I leave for people to answer for themselves. So these are just some very, very sporadic ideas, all taken from the Levaya and the Hespedim, which we have basically moved about a half a mile since I began this year, so it looks like I will have time for some Tosfos in. Not much time to get home tonight and prepare shir. But I just wanted, by way of contrast and in honesty, in ways that I hope are laudatory and appropriate for someone of this stature who is Nifter, to give those who aren't part of the Dati Lumi world here a sense of who this person was. And he's Zichro Baruch.